Welcome to Talk Wealth to Me, a safe space podcast where we chat about anything and everything related to personal finance.
The information contained in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It does not constitute as accounting, legal, tax, or other professional advice.
Hello and welcome to Talk Wealth to Me. The upside, I guess, if there is one to this pandemic that we are all going through, is we have seen how humanity can come together, and through dark times come light times. And we have seen this in many, many different ways, including the amount of dogs that have been rescued, animals that have been rescued and adopted. We talked to Joshua Prater, who is the medical director of Baja Dog Rescue, right down across the border here from San Diego, California. And we discussed many things regarding adoption of animals, including the costs, the things that people need to think about, and really just the responsibility that comes with rescuing and adopting an animal.
I'm glad it's early in the morning. That way I'm more alert.
Oh, yeah.
Afternoon would not be a good time, so I'm glad this time is perfect for me, actually.
Oh, perfect.
Good.
We try and plan it around my kids' nap time, unfortunately.
That's good. It's a good time. It's quiet. Yeah, the thing is, we just fed the dogs, and usually once they're fed, they don't bark a lot, so it should be quiet in the background.
Oh, just like my kids.
Yeah, well, actually, the dogs are actually children. That's the way you need to treat them all the time. Strangely, it doesn't matter what age they are, but they always act like children.
Yeah, so thanks for joining us. We really appreciate you joining us. And we know a little bit about your organization because Katie brought it to light and introduced us to your organization a little while back. But Tell us a little bit about Baja Dog Rescue.
We've been around for roughly around 14 years or so. We've been a nonprofit for about 10 years. We're actually one of the largest rescue facilities along the Tijuana-San Diego border area. The facility is about 50,000 square feet. We have a nameplate capacity of about 350 dogs. Currently, we have a little bit more than 100 dogs on site. We're rather unique because we actually have a hospital on site. The hospital, it's not a huge hospital, but it's about 1,400 square feet. It's fully equipped, so we can do blood transfusions. We can do cancer work from the standpoint of doing biopsies and determining what sort of cancer it is. We also do cancer treatment here. When there's shortages of cancer drugs, we can actually synthesize them on site. So right now there's a shortage of certain cancer drugs like vincristine, so we could actually make those ourselves on site here. So if the dog does have cancer, we don't have to worry that we can't treat the dog and that the dog has to be put to sleep because there's a lack of chemo agents available. So far to date, we've helped over 10,000 dogs. Usually on an annual basis, we're treating about 700 plus dogs externally to the facility. So people bring their dogs to us from San Diego or Tijuana, Rosarito, and then we do the work of dogs because we also have blood machines on site, so we can do blood work. So if we take blood from a dog, we can go and have analysis done in about 10 minutes or so, which is really quick. We can also do bacterial testing to find out if the bacteria is like gram positive or gram negative. We also check for parasites so we can see what sort of parasites are in the dog and actually treat for parasites. And then the other part of our equation is we actually do adoptions. Adoptions aren't a big thing for us, but we adopt roughly around 400 or so dogs a year. We actually have a lot of people that really want our dogs because we do such intensive medical on the dogs before we adopt them out. So people won't have a problem where they've adopted a dog and then a week later or 2 weeks later, the dog comes down with like parvo or some other serious sort of disease or something like that. And then we also offer people that adopt from us medical care for the future. They don't have to come to us. They can go to whatever vet they want. But if there's a situation where economically they can't afford the treatment, because there is a problem with something called economical euthanasia, where essentially you can't afford to take care of your dog. And so the only option that you have is to actually put the dog to sleep because you can't pay for medical care. So we also offer that service where you've gone to a vet and the vet's telling you it's, I don't know, $3,000 or five or six or whatever thousands of amount of money. And you can come back to us and we'll do it usually for about 10% or 15% of whatever the vets are charging you in the U.S.
That's awesome.
So that's your main thing. We also have about 8 full-time employees that are here 7 days a week because of the size of the facility. And we have medical staff on site all the time for the dogs.
Wow, that's awesome. And here I thought I knew all about your organization. We learned a whole lot. That's very impressive.
Yeah, well, we've been doing it for a long time, and our goal is to help as many dogs as possible. So a lot of people look at things on the financial basis, what sort of income comes in. We actually base our success based upon how many dogs we actually help on an annual basis. So we also help other people that do rescue. They'll get dogs in, and they don't have the medical capability that we have, so they can bring the dogs to us, and we'll do treatment on the dogs at low cost also before they adopt out to people.
Wow, that's phenomenal. I have firsthand experience with dog cancers and illnesses and all that kind of stuff. So what you guys are doing is that tugs at my heartstrings right now, I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, I mean, cancer is not a good thing. So the other thing that I'm working on right now is trying to prevent cancer. So like the dogs that we have here, we have a lot of senior dogs here. So we have a lot of dogs that unfortunately will never find houses in a million years, or they have chronic diseases. They'll have cancer or Addison's disease or megacolon disease. And so the goal here is to try to keep them alive as long as possible. And with the older dogs that we have here, we're doing a lot of treatments with them. It's not really treatments so much, but different chemicals or herbs and stuff like that that will actually hopefully help them live, well, I like to say forever, but as we all know, it's not realistic. But we want to push the can down the road as far as possible. And so far, we've been pretty good on longevity. Most of the older dogs that are here actually live to be about 17 to 18 years of age, which is pretty good. But we also feed the dogs special diets, both the dogs that are leaving the facility and the dogs that are here. And hopefully, that's helping them be healthier for the future.
Let's talk about dogs. There's been a lot of reports recently, or a few reports on the news and things, that with the stay-at-home orders, a lot of dog shelters have been, having great success with placing animals and finding them forever homes or foster homes. And, that allows them extra space to take extra good care of the ones that are left behind. But, how busy has your organization been? Have you seen the adoptions tick up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, right now we cannot, we have a massive demand for dogs right now. Literally, I think if we had 100 dogs available a day, we could do 100 adoptions a day. With us, that's not realistic because, like I said, we sit on the dogs for at least 30 days before we'll send them out. But yes, right now, if you have any sort of dog that's available, the public is really hot and heavy to adopt the dog or foster the dog. The only thing that I'm concerned about is when the coronavirus thing is over with, whether it's a day or a week or a month or whatever, I'm very concerned about the amount of people that when they go back to work, they're not going to foster any longer, or they're going to not have time to take care of the dogs that they've adopted, and that there's going to be a massive return rate. So that's a big concern that we have. So when we do adoptions, we actually have a 5-page questionnaire. Plus, we do 2 interviews with 2 different people in our organization to kind of make sure that this is a marriage and not just a date with the dogs.
That's a great way to look at it. And I can tell you just from sitting in on my kids' class Zoom meetings that they do, how many of his classmates have adopted a puppy. And I'm sitting there listening, and my kid's like, see, 3 of my friends got one. Why can't I go get one? So
it's
is
a lot of work.
Bag. It's a lot of, that's what I keep telling them. Like, you
it's an incredible. I mean, the thing is we adopt both adults and puppies. Generally speaking, people prefer puppies for a variety of reasons. Like I said, I've been doing this for a long time, so I've heard all the reasons. The thing is, if you get a puppy, it's a lot to deal with. I mean, personally, for me, I have about 15 dogs myself, and every single dog is an adult dog, and they're between the ages of, well, I've had some of them for a while. So, but they're between the ages of like 5 years up to 16 years right now.
Wow.
And I prefer adult dogs to puppies, but people want puppies, but people need a lot of training. And puppies, you need to look at them like they're a six-month-old baby. That's what you're dealing with. And if you have the time to take care of them, fantastic. But it's a lot of work, and it also should be something that's well thought of ahead of time and not just something, an impulse item where you saw it in the store and you're like, that'll look nice in my house. Because the thing is, you can't put them in a closet and kind of close the door. You got to take care of them 24/7, and it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I agree. I've put a requirement on my kid. I've told him that when we do decide to adopt a dog, and someday we will, he has to go on the 30 days leading up to it. He has to go on daily walks with me to prove that he can handle the daily walks that the dog's going to need.
Perfect. I mean, the other thing is, it's kind of funny because I've seen down here some of the younger people want to have children a little bit early, and so the school actually gives them dolls, and they have to take care of the doll for a week, bring it to school, take it home, that type of thing, so they can see what the responsibility is. It's a lot of responsibility, you know, and some people can handle and some people can't, but like I said, you want to make sure it's a long-term situation. When you get a dog, whether it's a puppy or an adult.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that you have to think about and take into consideration when owning a dog or any pet for that matter, but especially dogs, because most dogs need so much attention. But can you talk a little bit about when people are thinking about this and beyond the attention, the cost of having a dog, how many people really take into consideration what the costs of having that puppy or that dog full time?
Actually, I'm glad you asked that. So on our application, we actually put a questionnaire, how much do you think the dog is going to cost you on an annual basis? And we'll actually either accept or reject some of the applications if the numbers are not realistic. And it's not a question of whether you're rich or poor. It's just you put a number down and you're like, well, I think it's going to cost me $20 a year. That's not realistic. It's going to cost you a lot more than that. So you got to look at dog food. Dog food is a big thing. I push everybody to get insurance. I mean, they don't have to with us. We don't force it upon them. But realistically, insurance is, if I was in San Diego or anywhere in the United States, if I got a dog, whether it's a puppy or an adult, the first thing I would do is get insurance, because if there's really almost nothing wrong with the dog and has a minor little thing that's wrong with it, and you go to a vet, you're looking at least $1,000 plus for something like that. And insurance, there's a lot of different insurance companies out there, and you need to evaluate each one very carefully. But generally speaking, and it's based upon the age of the dog, you're looking at about $40 a month just for insurance, which I think is the best insurance in the world for you to buy. Because if something major happens, like the dog breaks its leg or something like that, you're looking at like $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 to take care of that. And a lot of people either don't have the credit ability or the financial ability to take care of something like that, and that's where insurance kicks in. Food is really not too expensive for the dog. I mean, you can go to Costco, I mean, Walmart, whatever, and you can get a 50-pound bag of dog food for probably a good quality one, probably for about $30 or so. So food-wise, you're probably looking at anywhere from $30 to $60 a month. Obviously, there's more expensive dog food out there, so it would cost more money. Water, but water is inexpensive. You need to make sure the bowls are clean and stuff like that. They need to get a bath maybe once a month or so you got to buy shampoos for something like that. Deworming is a big thing. They need to be on some sort of deworming schedule, whether it's 30, 60, or 90 days. Vaccines. When we adopt out, we try to make sure the dogs are completely vaccinated and up-to-date, but that doesn't mean they're protected for the rest of their lives. So you need to go to a vet at least once a year and redo a variety of vaccines, such as rabies, and then also the core vaccines, which are the parvo, distemper, parainfluenza, and then, of course, adenovirus. And those vaccines you need to either do every single year or every other year. And then they need to do fecal checks, which aren't too expensive. It really depends what vet you go to. And then, of course, there's flea medication. If you're in an area where there's a lot of fleas, then you need to look at the right medication for that. You can either do Comfortis or Trifexis. I kind of prefer Trifexis because it actually has a deworming agent in there also. So when you go and give the flea medication, you're also deworming at the same time. If you're in an area where there's a lot of ticks besides fleas, Comfortis and Trifexis don't work at all. So you'd have to jump over to something like a NexGard or Bravecto. They're still pretty reasonably priced. You're probably looking at something around $20 or so a month for those types of things. So that's an additional cost. You're looking at roughly around $240 a year for that type of medication. So that's the big things you have to look at. And then if there's any diseases that pop up, such as renal failure or hepatic issues, or they get kennel cough or something like that, those are additional things that can go wrong. And then there's also intestinal issues, such as Giardia. So if you go to dog park, you take the risk of getting something like that, then you got to go to a vet and do treatments for that. There's treatments for everything, but it's the cost involved to that. And people need to realize that it's kind of like us. Like, I have health insurance, and while I think I'm the healthiest person in the world, I still have health insurance if something goes wrong.
I am so glad you said that, because we got health insurance right when we got our golden doodle puppy, and he, you know, we literally 5 years went by, and beyond our, you know, the normal, like you just mentioned, the deworming and then the different vaccines and all that kind of stuff, we didn't really pay a penny except for his yearly checkup. And we're like, gosh, do we really need this? I mean, we're paying $40 a month for it, which is exactly. And then, I mean, it wasn't 2 weeks after we had this discussion, which we didn't get rid of it, by the way. And all of a sudden, I'm feeling a big lump under his right arm, in his armpit.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's 5 years old at the time, 5.5 years old. And sure enough, I couldn't figure out what it was. But now he was finally diagnosed with T-cell lymphoma.
Yeah, lymphoma is a big thing on dogs. It's the strange thing about lymphoma is I treat it all the time. So there's a lot of stuff you can do for lymphoma. But again, if you're going to American vets, and this is not an attack on them. I mean, we're a nonprofit organization. We're not a business. And so we try to do things cheaply. And if you go to a vet, you know, you expect a qualified person and they need to be paid well. Plus, vets, when they go to school, they got to go to school for a long time, and they accumulate roughly around $250,000 worth of debt they have to pay. And so they need to charge for what they do. But yeah, that's the big thing. If the cancer comes out, it really depends upon the cancer. There's some cancers that, I hate to say this, are good cancers. And I only say they're good cancers because they're easy to get rid of. Like, there's one cancer called TBT, which is super easy to get rid of. Lymphoma is a bad one. There's one that's even worse called hemangiosarcoma. That's a real disaster. That's a cancer you never want to hear. You don't want to hear that word. It's a really bad one. Lymphoma is cool in a certain way because there's a lot of stuff you could do for it. There's a ton of treatment protocols out there. But then again, you don't want any cancer whatsoever.
Right. Yeah. And our dog, he just had his last cancer treatment yesterday. He did a CHOP. Our doctors have been phenomenal. Super great with us. Nice. They were very honest with us up front. Like 95% of dogs, the cancer is going to come back eventually.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, the thing is with the CHOP protocol that particular protocol, by the way, I'm sure they know this already, but you can modify that protocol. There's a vaccine out there. The thing is, what you did will fail. And I'm not trying to depress you or anything like that.
I know.
But on the positive side, there's a whole bunch of stuff they can do. They can go back in there and they can redo the CHOP protocol all over again. They can pick out some of the items that are in there, like maybe not do the prednisone that's in there, maybe not do the vincristine that's in there. There's another protocol that you could talk to them about called Medtronic therapy. And essentially what that is, it's rather interesting, is that you actually give chemotherapy on a daily basis, but you don't do it at your vet. Your vet would actually give you pills, and you would give the pills every day or every other day. So it's kind of like getting an IV in the hospital. Right now, you don't need it because the dog is most likely in remission right now.
He is,
the problem is with the remission, you have no idea how long that remission is going to last.
Right.
It could be curative. I mean, it could be that the cancer will never come back. It's kind of unlikely.
Right.
But what you're after is remission on these things. That's the big goal. If you can get like a year, year and a half remission, you're doing really well. Realistically, the vets have no idea, including myself, how long the remission is going to last.
They've been very, very, very upfront about that the whole time. And they were saying that a lot of even dogs through the, you know, 20 weeks of this treatment that it would, mm-hmm. and you know, a lot of times it starts to creep back even during the treatment towards the end.
It does.
So far so good, knock on wood. It hasn't. Yeah. But he will go in for maintenance. But on the cost side of things, if we hadn't have had the insurance, we're talking $20,000 from the time that it was found, and then all the, you know, the different tests they had to do to, and then that was even before, you know, then there was even before we were $8,000 in before they even started the treatment. So because it took forever for them to really figure out what this was, it wasn't a normal, it was a weird, they had a hard time just really identifying it at first. So she said, you know,
really? They didn't just do it. Because the thing is, you do biopsies on the thing. And then the thing is, if it's, I mean, I do the biopsies here myself and I do the actual cytology on the cancers. So if you, well, I shouldn't say you, but if I have problems actually, you know, defining what sort of cancer it is, and it has happened with me, I'm pretty good about it. I'd say probably 95% of the time I'm good at picking out what the cancer is, but sometimes it's just, I can't figure it out. So what you would do is something called a histogram, and it's a very specialized form of seeing if the dog has cancer. Essentially, you do a biopsy punch on it, which is not a big deal. You send a sample out. It actually takes 2 weeks to get an answer on it, and it's because they do different stainings on
it.
They do different tests on it, but it actually gives you a definitive answer on exactly what the cancer is after two, roughly it's around 2 weeks.
That's really funny you say that, because that word stain, they did so many of those. They knew it was cancer. They just couldn't figure out exactly. They narrowed it down to two different specific cancers. It was either lymphoma, because that's where it was, or I forget what the other one was, but it was, oh gosh.
You know what it starts with? Is there mast cell?
Mast cell. Yes, that was it. Mast cell.
Yeah, mast cell, though, is a type of cancer. Like I said, there's degrees of bad, and mast cell isn't that bad of a cancer. Mast cell actually is one of those good cancers. If this was mast cell, you do surgical removal on it, and assuming you get clean margins on it, you're done with it. You don't have to worry about it. If you get dirty margins, you know, it's going to come back and you do surgery all over again. Lymphoma is one of those things where you can't do surgical removal on it.
Right.
You just have to go in and treat it with chemo. But on the lymphoma, some of the chemo agents are cheap on it, like the prednisone's pretty cheap, the vincristine's pretty cheap on that. Some of the other stuff, like the doxorubicin, it's inexpensive. But the problem is when you're actually treating the dog with those different chemo agents, they can have very bad reactions to the stuff. The vincristine's not too bad, but the doxorubicin is super bad. So they got to do a lot of prep on it before they give it to a dog, because it affects their heart badly. And actually, on the doxorubicin, it's cardiotoxic, so you can only do around 5 dosages on it.
Yeah, he just finished his last one yesterday.
That was a problem.
Yeah, on top of the emotional, obviously the emotional, you know, difficulties with it, there's all those, every time it's a new financial implications that go along with it.
It is.
And I've seen we've seen on social media that you guys are actually helping out during this time. Obviously, you know, we're all going through some unprecedented financial times, but you're able to help out some of those who maybe aren't able to afford their pet food during this time. So, you know, and you mentioned foods earlier and how you can go to Costco, and what's a good way to figure out what the best food is for your pet?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I have a preference. I kind of like Costco's. Costco has their own brand. That's a pretty good food. That food is based upon the dog's gut bacteria. And so whoever formulated that food, was their emphasis was on making sure the dog's gut was healthy. And if the dog's gut was healthy, the dog itself would be healthy. There's a lot of different brands out there that are available. I'm not just concentrating on Costco. We use Pedigree. Roasted chicken flavored, because the dogs like the flavoring on it. The only problem with that is that's a very basic dog food, so we actually have to supplement that food with vegetables and other stuff to kind of make it more wholesome. There's also Purina One, which I like a lot. It's not super expensive. It's kind of the middle of the road, and I kind of like that food. So typically what you want to look for in a label is there's a few things that I don't like to see. So if I look at a bag of dog food and I see the word brewer's rice, immediately I would reject that immediately, because brewer's rice is just white rice. There's nothing special about it. If I see a food that actually has like oatmeal in it, beans are really nice. The vitamins that are in there, the minerals that are in there, I look at the minerals to see what sort of derivative of the minerals they are. If they're the lower price minerals or better quality minerals, which are more bioavailable, that's really important to me. If they put bacteria in the food, for gut health, that's really important to me. If they put lipoic acid in there, that's a positive. I look at the form of vitamin C that they put in there. If it says vitamin C, then I don't like that. But if they put a derivative of vitamin C, which is more shelf-stable, that's more positive to me. I look at the fat that's in there. Are they using chicken fat, or are they using, like, canola oil or olive oil? If they're using soybean oil, that to me is a negative. I wouldn't buy that dog food. But I also look at the descending order of the ingredients that are in there. The first ingredient, obviously, is the most abundant that's in the dog food. So you want to see what that first thing is. If it's meat byproducts, obviously, that's a no-no. If it's corn, that's a no-no to me also. So I'm looking for more grains. Like if they put barley in there, that's a positive. Oatmeal is a positive to me. Beans is a positive. Things like that. If there's vegetables, they'll put what they call vegetable pomace in there, which is essentially dried vegetables. If that goes into the dog food, then I like that a lot. But it also depends upon where those ingredients are listed on the ingredient label. If they're at the very end of the ingredient label, then obviously they put nothing in there. But if it's close to the beginning, they put a lot in there, so that would be a positive. If they put coconut fat in there, that's a real positive to me also. They either call it coconut fat, or the other term they use is MCT oil, which is medium chain triglycerides. So the thing is, they found for cognitive health in dogs, if you give them MCT, that helps a lot. It also helps them for skin health. The other thing I'm looking for is they put fish oil in there. So if you see EPA or DHA in the dog food, that's a real positive to me also.
And you mentioned with one of them subsidizing with like vegetables. Are there any budget-friendly recipes that people can use to make their own dog food or treats?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what we do, actually. I mean, we make something up. I think it's pretty inexpensive. I try not to buy too much in the way of fresh vegetables because usually they're going to go bad on us. So I buy frozen vegetables. So I go to various grocery stores and they, in the dollar, well, you can buy vegetables that are dollar a bag, and so I buy dollar a bag vegetables. So we're buying kale for the dogs. Spinach is a big thing that you can do. They have mixed vegetables where they have carrots, peas, and corn. Corn I'm not a big fan of, so I kind of want to stay away from that. Broccoli is a big thing. So what I do is I'll buy some pork, low-cost pork. I'll grill it just for like a few minutes just to get a roast flavor on it. Then after that, I'll stick it in the microwave and blast it for probably about 5 minutes or so. So I take some pork. I get broccoli. We make beans up for them. We put kale in there, carrots, and then I put it in a Cuisinart or blending machine, and we grind it up into a mush. And then what I do is I put supplements in there, such as vitamins and minerals, and then we use that as an adjunct food to the dogs here. And they seem to love it. I also use cabbage, too, green cabbage. That I cook in the microwave for probably about 5 minutes or so, grind it up. And they seem to love cabbage. Oh, and sweet potato. That's another thing. My greatest, newest discovery is sweet potato right now. So I buy sweet potatoes, peel them, cut them in slice, put them in a bowl, put them in the microwave for about 8 minutes or so, let it cool down to room temperature because you never want to give your dog something hot. And then as a treat, I use that the sweet potato as a treat to them. And they seem to love it. I use it both on the adult dogs and also the puppies. And even if they're sick and they don't feel like eating, they seem to love that stuff. So sweet potato would be a big thing.
Yeah, I see sweet potato in Chase and Katie's shopping list in the near future.
It's funny. Yeah. That's one of the few things Jackson really, really likes. Because we'll eat sweet potatoes, and then any leftovers that we have, we'll give him. And he eats that right up. And he's a relatively, I don't want to say a finicky dog, but like, it's interesting. If for instance, we don't eat Doritos a lot, but if they fall on the ground, a lot of dogs would just snatch that up. He won't touch chips. He won't touch.
Wow, that's unusual.
It's really unusual. He won't touch French fries, which is even crazier to me. But you put
If I have French fries, I mean, they'll literally bite my hand off trying to get the French fries out of my hand. No. I mean, French fries aren't good for you.
No.
Well, not for them either, but. Well, I like French fries. I try not to eat them too often. But that sweet potato thing, it's something I figured out like about a month ago. But it was more of a fluke thing. It wasn't something I thought out or anything like that. And I'm like, it seems healthy. I'll make it. We'll see if they eat it. If they eat it, I'll buy more. If not, well, it was a bad idea. And they seem to be just crazy over that stuff. We have older dogs that are super finicky. And even though they're super finicky, they'll literally eat 5 pounds of sweet potato. I mean, if I let them, they'll eat 5 pounds of sweet potato. So it's bizarre. Sweet potato has some sort of magical thing in it. I'm not sure what, but they seem to like a lot. Plus, it's really healthy for them.
One thing I do know, talking with a lot of friends, and we go back and forth, people that have dogs, and we're constantly asking each other about dog treats and those kinds of things that, you know, where you help train the dog and all that stuff. But there are so many different kinds, and some that are just awful for them. Where do you recommend along those lines as far as
the, well, on the dog treats? I mean, we, strangely enough, we get a lot of donation of dog treats, mainly because people buy dog treats and it doesn't work on their dogs, so they elect to donate them to us. On the dog treats, it's, I mean, literally, I'd have to be in a store with you to look at each label and kind of tell you what's good or bad, because it just varies tremendously. For us on treats, what I buy, and I don't know, people aren't going to like this too much, but I buy packages of hot dogs, and I put them in the microwave for about 10 seconds or so to warm them up a little bit, and we cut them up in little pieces. We use that as treats. And the sweet potato is our newest treat. The other thing is, we want, dogs don't brush their teeth, as we all know, so I try to buy them dental bones if possible, or the hard bones that you see in the store. And those I would recommend as a treat to the dogs. You got to be really careful with dogs on these treats, because if they make them too small or too hard, or they make them out of pork skin or something, I've seen a lot of choking issues happen with those types of things. So treats, I'm usually really scared of them. The only thing I saw, there was a treat out there, it's like artificial bacon. They form it into, like, it looks like bacon. That seems to be okay because it's soft. I haven't seen any choking in it, and that would be a good treat. I don't remember the brand name on it, but you'd see it in the store. It's like bacon treat or something like that. The label is really bold in colors.
It's,
yeah, so
like
that
bacon, bacon treats.
That's
something.
It. That's the thing. So that one I would actually recommend. And the only reason I recommend it is, not to say it's great for your dogs, but it's not a choking hazard. It's got a lot of flavor in it. And as a treat, I think that's acceptable. Like I said, the big thing I'm worried about is choking hazards.
Okay.
Can you kind of go through that? Can you kind of go through the line as we're talking about adoption and it's going through so quickly? What should people really prepare for the most as they're going in?
When they show up, I mean, it's I actually do a lot of the adoptions myself. So some people show up with a checklist, which is fine. The checklist, if they actually wrote the checklist out themselves, I think that's an outstanding idea. But if it's something they just went on the internet and found someone else's checklist, I think that's a really bad idea, because people show up with an internet-based checklist and they're asking the questions from that checklist and they don't really understand why they're asking those questions. And when you give them an answer, they don't really understand what the answer is to that question, how it affects them. It's something that the day before or a few days before, they should make up a list up, because usually when people are adopting, they get very emotional and excited about getting the dog. It's something new, and they can't think of everything that they want to ask. So if they can make a checklist up, that's really nice for them to do. We supply a harness and leash, but if you're not obviously not adopting from us, you should get a harness and leash. Get a collar, but the collar is not for the leash, because that's a choking hazard on them. It's just for the ID tags. You should always have a harness on your dog for walking. When you do show up, you need to take a look at the dog, make sure the dog is healthy. Big thing you need to look for is medical records. Make sure that whoever you're adopting from, whether it's a public agency or private party, that they actually have real medical records and they've actually done the vaccines. The other thing is, when you see the dog, don't just adopt the dog right then and there that exact second. Go and spend 10, 15, 20 minutes or 30 minutes. When we do adoption events, we actually set up little corrals for people. So when you show up to look at the dog that you've made an appointment for, we'll stick you in a corral with a volunteer, and you spend as much time as you want with the dog to kind of interface and kind of see what the personality is. Health-wise, the dog should be active. If it's real sleepy or seems real tired to you, not moving around a lot, you need to be really careful. Meeting people in a parking lot is a really bad idea. You should really check the reputation of whoever you're getting the dog from. Whether it's, I mean, the government, you don't need to check their reputation because you know them. But if it's from an individual, you need to be a little bit more cautious. If it's a rescue organization, it's really easy to check them out to see what's going on, see if they have a Facebook page, see what they advertise, see what they do. And then also see what the refund policy is. So if you adopt a dog and you call back the next day and you want to return the dog, will they accept the dog back? The other thing is, when you initially contact them, see how responsive they are to responding to you. If they don't really respond that well when you're inquiring, what's going to happen a week later if the dog is sick and you need to get in contact with them? And then the most important thing, we talked about this before, is have an insurance policy lined up right away.
How much do people take into consideration their living situation and conditions and what type of dog they're thinking about adopting, and how important is that When you think about cost as well, I mean, if you're living in, if you have a big dog and the dog needs to be run all the time, you know, what should you take into consideration as living situations?
On living situation, a lot of people, from what I've seen, are basing getting dogs based more upon looks than anything else, which I think is a big mistake. A big dog is not a problem. So as an example, if I had a big dog and I lived in a one-bedroom apartment, but I was active, you know, I was on the beach or hiking or whatever, a big dog's fine. They don't really need a lot of space. Because a lot of people come to us and they tell me they've got 5,000 acres or a billion acres of land, and the dog really doesn't care about that too much. The dog wants to spend time with you. So if you're living in a broom closet, that's fine for the dog. The dog doesn't really care. The big thing I think you need to be concerned about is activity level of the dog. But the problem is you need to spend time with the dog to see the activity level. If the dog is really active and you're not home all the time, or you're more of an office person versus an outdoorish person, that's going to be a problem. You need to kind of find a dog that's going to work with your living situation from the standpoint. You're real active, you need an active dog. I like to sit in front of the TV all day and watch TV. You need a dog that's going to sit in front of the TV and watch TV with you all day. People, from what I've seen, people do not take that in consideration at all. It's more based upon the breed of the dog that they're after and the looks of the dog. So, I mean, like a lot of people like huskies. Huskies are very easy to adopt because they're super cute when they're puppies. The problem is when they hit 6 months or a year, they have a lot of activity. People don't really plan on it that well. And unfortunately, a lot of times they turn those over to the county government to take care of. And they should take that in consideration when they're getting them, not just based upon looks initially.
Yeah, I think that's phenomenal advice. I think that it's funny. I keep telling my kids, like, oh, are you researching dogs? Yeah, I sure am. Are we getting one tomorrow? No, I'm just researching for at some point down the road. We got a ways to go. But when it is time, I want to have read hours and hours worth of information. Sometimes I research things to a fault. But for those who might be listening, who perhaps want to either adopt a dog from your organization, or maybe even make a donation or help out with your efforts to provide medical care or food for dogs, how can they get in contact with you? How can they learn more?
Oh, perfect. Okay, well, I'll mention one thing. We were talking about the virus thing right now. One of the problems that we're experiencing right now is we used to get monthly donations from people via PayPal, and because a lot of people are unemployed right now or kind of living on government help right now, we've had a tremendous amount of cancellations. So we'd appreciate any help. It doesn't have to be via PayPal, but PayPal does have a monthly donation set up. If they'd be interested in donating via PayPal, it's the PayPal address is info@bajadogrescue.org. Again, info@bajadogrescue.org. We also have a Venmo account, which is at baja-dogrescue. Contact information for us, if they're interested in finding out how to help us more or make donations or actually getting a dog from us, our phone number is 619-407-9372. And then our email address is info@bajadogrescue.org, O-R-G. And we'd really appreciate help. We're having a lot of problems with dog food right now, getting donations on it. Newspapers, strangely enough, we're having a horrific time in getting newspapers right now because people don't really read newspapers that much. And because people are at home, they're not able to leave and they're not able to donate to us. So we actually have an Amazon wish list. And on that wish list, strangely enough, it has newspapers as one of the things we're looking for. Canned food would be nice. That's also on our Amazon wish list. And they can easily buy stuff off of Amazon. They could also list us as their charity of choice. So when they do shop on Amazon, Amazon will donate a certain percentage of the purchase that they make to us. And I think they do the donation on a monthly basis or every couple of months. And that we'd appreciate a lot. We have a lot of people coming here with their dogs that are sick. They don't really have any money, and we need to kind of subsidize the medical care for those dogs, and we need the public's help to continue doing something like that.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate it. Honestly, I learned a whole lot, and it's very timely because now I get to, next time they ask for a puppy, I'm like, there's Spotify. Go jump on there and listen to the last episode of the podcast.
Yeah, there you go. That'll help. Love the idea.
Perfect. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. You know, and hopefully this is able to help, and we definitely learned a lot, and hopefully our, you know, listeners will be able to make educated dog adoption choices.
Excellent. Thank you so much for contacting us.
Thank you for being with us. Bye-bye.